But joining us this morning to talk about this latest pilot study, because it has an awful lot to say about our New Zealand education system, in part, but also about what's going to happen in NCA, is the author of this, A Way Ahead for NCA Literacy and Numeracy, Dr. Michael Johnson, and he joins us now. Dr. Johnson, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning.
I don't understand, and I'm a parent with children doing NCA, and I like to think that I'm a relatively informed individual, where the new literacy and numeracy standards are going to be fitting into the secondary school curriculum. Can you tell me?
Well, that's a good question. They fit into the qualification system, or they will. At the moment, there is also a literacy and numeracy requirement. And in fact, there are two ways of getting it, just to make things simple. One of them actually doesn't involve doing any direct assessments of literacy or numeracy.
Michael, can I just ask you, please, just to step a little bit away from your microphone? We're getting some feedback. Is that possible?
Oh, yes, certainly. How's that?
That's much better. Thank you so much.
So the way most students currently attain the literacy and numeracy requirements is by getting 10 credits in each of those areas from other assessments. So they could be, for example, in history or in biology. So they select standards on the basis that they involve doing some reading or some writing or a certain amount of calculation. And the problem with those that way of doing it is that it doesn't actually certify a particular level of literacy or numeracy. So a few years ago, I was part of a project funded by the Tertiary Education Commission, right, looking into the literacy and numeracy of young people going into tertiary education that was not university level, so polytechs and the like. And we found out that this particular approach to certifying literacy and numeracy didn't correlate with an actual test of literacy or numeracy. So in other words, it didn't certify reliably at all whether somebody had attained a particular level of literacy or numeracy. This is a long way of saying there already is a requirement, and the new requirement, to the credit of the Ministry of Education, they took this result seriously, and they've now developed this new method that does in fact require students to undertake assessments directly of literacy and numeracy. But having done so, we've found these fairly appalling results in terms of the levels that they're attaining.
Well, I mean, and now, to get
to the answer to your question, they're going to have to get this requirement in order to get any level of NCEA.
Right.
So it's what's known as a co-requisite.
All right. Sorry, you're still speaking. So even, listen, you might have to go and stand the other side of the room. No, I'm just joking. If you just come back a little bit from that microphone, Michael, that'd be cool.
Sure.
Thanks so much. The thing, though, and the key aspect of your research is that, or of this test, is that the new test that they're developing, you found that only two-thirds of kids passed the numeracy and the reading requirement of literacy, and roughly only one-third of that doing writing. Now, that suggests
two things.
Either your literacy numeracy tests are too high, or we've got a shocking downplay in standards at that level. Which of those two is it?
Well, it's the latter. The report from the ministry makes pretty clear that it's a good bit of research, and they did a whole lot of analysis on whether the assessment itself was up to it, and it is. It's valid and reliable, and seems to be pitched at the right level. So it's not a problem with the assessment. It's a problem the way we've been teaching literacy and numeracy at primary school level for about three decades.
Wow, I mean, that's phenomenal. So the Tertiary Education Commission, they are the people who came up with the test, or the Ministry of Education?
No, the Ministry of Education.
So they come up with this test, which is, and you can imagine them, they're not sitting there trying to fail kids. And on a basic literacy numeracy standard, we're finding that a third of New Zealanders fail literacy and numeracy, or New Zealand kids, and two-thirds of writing. You're putting the blame on the primary school system. You're saying that's the reason these kids are failing at this level. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to actually use the word blame in relation to the primary school
system. Well, somebody's responsible.
Because I'd say it's the Ministry for Education more than anyone else, and arguably teacher training. So there is a great deal of scientific research on how best to teach these things, and we haven't been following it. Now, I don't want to blame primary schools for that because they don't read scientific journals, but the people who set the policy have sold both our teachers and more importantly, our students, our young people, short for a long time.
We're particularly bad at writing. Is that due to being the electronic age, or...?
I don't think so. I think that writing is always a slower skill to develop than reading because it's a productive skill, meaning you've got to actually produce it yourself, whereas reading is a receptive skill. Once you've mastered, if you master the mappings between spelling and sound, then a lot of words you can read as long as they're in your oral vocabulary. Writing involves composition and putting things together. It's a more difficult thing to learn.
It says also, well, you make in the note of your research note that it's across all deciles, geographical locations, and I guess ethnicities in terms of the pilot study.
The pilot study involved a variety of schools, yes.
But did it break it down into deciles? And because I'm betting that if I start to break those statistics down into deciles and ethnicities, I'm going to get an even bigger shock.
Well, you'll see what we regrettably see in a lot of different educational data, which is that kids at lower decile schools don't do as well as kids at higher decile schools on average. And we have gaps between ethnicities, gaps between boys and girls as well.
Yeah, yeah. Now, to solve this dilemma, you've recommended a whole series of issues, but one of the things is you're saying, listen, these have got to go ahead. They're planned for, is it 2 years' time that they're meant to come into the curriculum?
2024.
Yeah. But you don't want them as prerequisites for NCA. Why?
Well, I just don't think we can do that. We've brought these kids through the school system with a particular qualification system in place that yields upwards of at least 80% of kids getting NCEA Level 1, thereabouts. If we introduced these standards as co-requisites, then only a third would get NCEA, probably less, because some might get writing but not numeracy, for example. And the plan is that they have to get all three to get NCEA. I just don't think we can do that to young people. But neither do I want us to toss these standards out. I think it's really important that we have them. So the solution, as far as I'm concerned, is to introduce them as a standalone certificate of literacy and numeracy that's separate to NCEA. But then, you know, to work towards as quickly as possible remediating the problem, which is that we haven't been teaching literacy and numeracy as effectively as we could, with a view to introducing the co-requisite in about 5 years. That would take a lot of resources.
Well, but it also takes...
That would be resources well spent because...
But it also would take a massive change in Ministry of Education thinking, in teachers' colleges, in teachers themselves, wouldn't it? It would take them almost through a philosophical change, which I don't know if they'd be ever ready to make, would they?
I think that's a really good point. The educational morass that we've got ourselves into is what you might call a Gordian knot. It's very difficult to know where to begin to unpick it. You're right. It would take a minister with a great deal of political will to get on top of this. And we can only hope for one of those to emerge. I've been around educational circles now for 20 years or so, and I haven't seen a minister with that kind of courage on either side of politics emerge yet.
No. The other thing, though, that comes out of this is that are we actually getting the wrong people in teaching? It seems that teaching was once a profession, and I'm thinking back to my childhood, which was respected. It wasn't particularly well paid then, but it was respected, and you had a really good balance of folk, particularly a gender balance in our primary schools. Now, that's all changed, and I don't know that you get very bright people going into teaching anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to impugn individual teachers, but I do think that they're not being trained in the most effective ways of teaching, which is probably more to the point. But, if we think back, I mean, I don't know how old you are. I was a primary school kid in the early 1970s, through the 1970s, and we were the beneficiary in those days. I mean, you mentioned the gender balance, and that's true, but I've got to say that probably second wave feminism was the worst thing to happen to the teaching profession, because it opened up all these career opportunities for smart women who previously were teachers. So there is that factor.
All the bright women left the profession and went and did something else.
Or they just, you know, the ones coming through trained to be lawyers and other things.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's interesting. So what you're saying basically is if you're a male... if you're a male, extrapolating on that, if you're a male primary school teacher in the 60s and 70s and 80s, then really you were at the bottom of the tree in terms of.
I don't want to say that.
I know you don't.
Teachers, I think they were very passionate, but
I'll use that at my father though. I'm sorry, my father was a school teacher and a school principal, so I must use that argument next time. That'll end that argument. Listen, thank you for joining us, Michael. Can I ask one thing, though? It's only two pager, research paper.
It doesn't take long to say what we need to say.
It does not. And I'm surprised that I haven't seen more media coverage of it, because we're talking about the government's own research. Are you surprised as well?
I was a little bit surprised that it wasn't picked up on more quickly. There was very little, if anything, in the big newspapers. Mm. I did talk to John Gerritsen on RNZ, and I think he's a good education reporter, and he did a good balanced job. But it's been interesting. Yeah.
Is it because we don't? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. Is it because there are no good education reporters? Is it because we don't value education now in our new mainstream media? There used to be good, great coverage of education, schooling issues. I just don't see it unless somebody is selling drugs.
I can't really understand it either. I mean, it's not a partisan political issue, because both sides of politics are equally culpable for the problem.
Yes.
they've both had long innings in government while this problem has persisted. So. Yeah.
No, it's a fair point you make. Michael, well, you're always welcome on this show. Thank you very much for talking to us this morning.